This is CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
Afghanistan, Pakistan, always in the news because the turmoil since the U.S. departure, the turmoil since the Al-Qaeda attack on the United States, the turmoil for decades in Afghanistan and Pakistan is upon us. And I welcome my colleagues, Bill Raggio of the Foundation for the Defense of Democracy, a senior fellow keeping the Long War Journal with his colleagues, and Hussain Haqqani, former ambassador from Pakistan to the United States, now at the Hudson Institute. Hussain, I begin with you because the headlines in Pakistan are loomingly dangerous. Imran Khan, the previous prime minister who left office after being rejected by the parliament and the newspapers and world affairs because of his unusual way of governing, is now returned, I believe, to Islamabad and is taunting, daring, provoking the government of the new government of Mr. Sharif to arrest him. He's allegedly charged with inciting riots, which is pretty straightforward given how he's held rallies these last weeks since he left office. Your measure of Imran Khan's tactics and your measure of the Sharif government in dealing with him, what is to be done? Good evening to you, Mr. Ambassador.
Good evening, John. Imran Khan, after losing power, is behaving like any other narcissist leader who doesn't want to accept the political outcome that has been handed to him by the constitutional process. All he wants to do now is subvert it. So he has a cult-like following. This is not a majority of Pakistanis by any measure. He didn't win a majority of the popular vote even last time, even though he got a plurality of the seats in parliament. That is why he lost, because his allies that he had to get from other parties defected to the opposition. Anyway, so what he's trying to do is two things. One, he's trying to play the anti-American and anti-India sentiment that is almost always there in Pakistan. And what he's hoping for, and he's also added a little touch of anti-Israel comments, you know, saying that we will never recognize, etc. All of those things are meant to appeal to the mid-ranking Pakistani military officers who grew up with an Islamist orientation under several Pakistani military leaders. The second thing he's hoping to do is to create chaos. He wants violence in the streets. That may necessitate a military intervention. He says he wants an immediate election, but very frankly, violence will not get him an election. It might actually get him some kind of an emergency government or martial law. And he's okay with it because he's no good in parliamentary politics. He hardly ever attended parliament, either as leader of opposition or as prime minister. He just is a classic rebel rouser and a demagogue. Now, will it succeed? I don't think so. For example, one of his members of parliament yesterday said, I am going to blow myself up as a suicide bomber if anything happens to Imran Khan. Now, that doesn't sound like a politician or a political activist to me. That sounds like a terrorist to me. So the Pakistani government will not attract any international criticism or criticism for Pakistan's, a lot of Pakistan's own citizens, if there is action taken against people who make threats like that. That said, it's going to be ugly. It's not going to be good for Pakistan. As far as the government is concerned, it's slowly getting its act together. It hasn't been as efficient as anybody had expected, but they should be able to hold things together and put Imran Khan in some kind of a box. But if they don't succeed, then we are in for even greater trouble in Pakistan.
My memory of our conversation when Khan left office is that the army matters a great deal in what is going to happen. The army gets a vote. Does the army have an opinion of these tactics of Khan? Is the army going to participate in some fashion? If there is an arrest in Islamabad, does the army have confidence in the new government?
The army certainly does not want to be part of what might be seen as a political conflict. If it wants to be the institution of last resort of Pakistan, which is how it has defined itself and described itself for years, it will wait for the chaos to play out and then intervene. That said, it is firmly behind the government. It's not playing any political role at the moment. It is at least not overtly. I'm sure there is some covert role being played. They always do that. They do not want to risk their reputation on the efficiency or lack thereof of the civilian government. But they are certainly done with Imran Khan. That is very clear to me. I don't think that the army will ever back Imran Khan again. This man has been a hand grenade, live grenade that has been thrown at US-Pakistan relations. He has subverted sort of all political processes and constitutional processes. He is too dangerous for the army to continue supporting.
Bill, a very good evening to you. The report these last days is that the Pakistan Taliban has initiated a ceasefire in some fashion. And I don't know who the ceasefire is with. Is it with the Pakistan government? Is it with the Afghanistan government? Do you account for this announcement, Bill?
Good evening, John. Yes, the Pakistani Taliban has been in talks with the Pakistani government, and it's being brokered by the Afghan Taliban. As you noted, they announced an indefinite ceasefire, which means they must be very happy with the way negotiations are going. I've heard rumors that the Pakistani government, really the Pakistani establishment, which would be the military ISI in this case, because they dictate foreign policy at this point, may give them the ability to control areas of what used to be known as the federally administered tribal agencies, allow them to enforce Sharia law, to end targeting, to release prisoners. So essentially give them an emirate in northwestern Pakistan. But we haven't had anything concrete. I haven't seen any concrete reporting on this. And if this all sounds familiar, because this is what happened in the mid to late 2000s when the Pakistani military under the Musharraf government granted the TTP control of tribal agencies. Then they initiated their insurgency and took control of large areas of northwestern Pakistan and even advanced to within 60 miles of Islamabad into the district of Bunar. That was when the Pakistani, that and some suicide bombings at general headquarters and other places forced the Pakistani military to take action. You can't trust the Pakistani Taliban then. You can't trust the Afghan Taliban ever. And the Pakistani government shouldn't trust them now. But here we are, strategic depth, a safe haven in Afghanistan, and dealing with the movement of the Taliban in Pakistan is far more important to the Pakistani establishment than is the lives of their own people. That's just the harsh, cynical reality that exists in Pakistan when it comes to both the Afghan and the Pakistani Taliban.
One detail, Bill, you have a report on Long War Journal with your colleague Andrew Tobin of a Tajik commander in an Al-Qaeda-linked organization in the north of Afghanistan, who's not only celebrating his ties to the Taliban, but I take it he's in charge of these districts. Is this more evidence, as if we needed it, that Al-Qaeda never left Afghanistan?
Yeah, exactly. His name is Mahdi Arsalan. He was put in command of several districts in Badakhshan province in the north last summer. He is a Tajik who's a commander within a group called Ansarullah, Jamaat Ansarullah. It is a Tajik terrorist group. It's designated by the Tajik government. It's conducted suicide attacks and other attacks inside Tajikistan. They basically integrated in with the Taliban. It's just further. Yeah, you're right. We needed no more evidence of this. It's just, you know, it's one of the things I'm doing is just documenting the Taliban lies. And he's not the only one. I have a video that I'm working on of the head of the Turkestan Islamic Party celebrating Eid in Afghanistan. He was a member of Al-Qaeda's Shura, which probably still is. Also, the head of the Turkestan Islamic Party, the U.S. thought they killed him in a drone strike, but he came back alive. This is just par for the course in Afghanistan. This is why I say it was always madness to try to negotiate with them, to trust them, to take their word at anything.
Hussein, just a moment about this ceasefire with the Pakistan Taliban. Is that significant that the Sharif government has negotiated this, or was this left over from before in the hands of the army? We have just a minute.
It's something that's part of the what is known as the permanent establishment of Pakistan and its designs. The Sharif government neither had a say in it, nor could it have vetoed it. The Pakistani military, as Bill pointed out, has done these deals going all the way back to Musharraf's time. And the idea is that the Islamists pose less of a threat to Pakistan than, say, nationalist separatists from various ethnic groups within the country. And so, therefore, let's cut a deal with them if we can. The deals are never kept, so we will see a breakdown of this deal as well.
Yes, I'm reminded of an anecdote from the 1930s in Europe. I believe it was the U.S., when the sheriff makes a deal with the chief gangster and there are no more robberies, the sheriff is a hero. The next time there's a robbery, the sheriff is the problem. So I thank Bill Rajo and Hossein Haqqani for commenting on Pakistan. We're going to turn to a larger story when we come back, which is the intelligence failure. Not my word. This is the word of Washington in misunderstanding the Afghanistan conflict. And this review is ongoing because Al-Qaeda. I'm John Batchelor.